It's July 2nd, 2010. This is Candace Ellis and
Amanda Knoll.
We're interviewing
Dee Dee Bremer,
Malena Bremer,
Fred Bremer.
All right. And the best place to start, I guess, is from the beginning. So, how did your family and yourselves find yourself in the canal zone?
Well, the time was the French building of the canal when our families actually began with the arrival of Jean Lepriere and Edmond Vaisset, or it was the opposite. Anyhow, they came from France. They were not coming for the construction of the canal, but rather as wine distributors. So they came and distributed French wine. And of course, there was quite a market for it. Mm-hmm. Took a lot of courage and initiative. And from there, these were great grandparents. So our great grandmother, Elena Vaisset, was raised in Panama by French parents. Grandmother Elena Vaisset, raised in Panama by the French parents. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, our grandfather came from
Jamaica.
You can tell that part of the story.
I don't. Our grandfather, who came from Jamaica, came from to Panama to start his own business. It was in the agricultural supplies and veterinary supplies business.
He was an Englishman.
Yeah.
You said Jamaica.
From Jamaica. A Brit from Jamaica. Spoke with a Jamaican accent.
The old Bajan accent, we love it.
But very white.
He began his own import-export business with the idea of these agricultural and veterinarian products. And he went into business with a Danish man and is
Mr.
credited.
Right?
Mr. Ishoy, what was his first name?
I can't remember his first name. Mr. Ishoy. Danish.
And they're credited for importing the Canal Zone matches from Sweden. And I have a box up in my room and I neglected to bring it with me. I'm sorry.
And there's a pack in the museum.
There is? There's a really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Pack of about 12.
The museum has.
And they were specially made because of the humidity in Panama.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they'd still light.
Well, the little box I have, the ends where you brush the match, that's all
yeah.
worn out.
Yeah.
So somehow this Jamaican gentleman, Brit, got together with this French lady. Show them the pictures in the.
Oh.
The French connection is so fascinating.
This is their wedding picture.
Oh wow! It's a very ornate dress.
Yeah.
That was about 1909, mm-hmm. approximately. Mm-hmm. 1910.
Oh, wouldn't it show?
I should have highlighted the dates. See, this goes off onto the line into the Benson family.
Oh, that's great. Is that your family tree?
Yeah,
this is part of the family.
It's the wrong branch.
Well, it's one of Ita's sisters. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's Elena Vaisset. Her sister, Sarah Vaisset, ended up marrying an American and moving to the United States. So we've been in touch with that branch of the French family.
Mm-hmm.
But we called our grandparents Ito and Ita.
Which was short for?
Abuelito and Abuelita. So although they were French and Brits, mm-hmm. they spoke Spanish in the home and mm-hmm. English, but with the British and Jamaican accent. But Ito's business, the import business, Agencias Escoferi, has been in the family ever since and is now run by our cousin and his son, Pancho Guardia Escoferi, and his son, Tommy.
Did we even mention our grandfather's name, Escoferi?
Escoferi, yes. Agencias. Did we mention that?
I'm not sure.
It's very disjointed.
Escoferi. So Elena Vaisset got together with Francis Escoffrey.
Vaisset.
And produced six children.
One of them being our mother.
Mm-hmm. One of them was our mother. So, and there was only one brother. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, my grandfather ended up buying some property up in Volcan. Have you been to Panama?
No.
Oh, gosh.
I've heard about that area.
Okay, well, Volcan is really very close to the Costa Rican border. And he raised cattle there. And at one point, his only son started a milk, powdered milk factory. Remember the, not Similac, what am I thinking? Calle de Meno.
Yeah, Klim.
Vitalac. Okay. Vitalac. V-I-T-A-L-A-C.
I did not know.
In any case, that the story is that when they traveled from Panama up to Volcan, back when our mother and her siblings, her five siblings, were little, they would drive as far as David and go by horseback all the way up to Volcan. And at one point, our grandmother, Ita Elena Veset Escoferi, she was pregnant with her youngest daughter, Irma, pregnant and going by horseback from David to Volcan, which now is an hour's drive. And so you can imagine by horseback how long it took. Mm-hmm. And these were very courageous people. I mean, adventurous and courageous to do that. And horses weren't air conditioned either. So, you
know. Yeah.
What else can we tell you about Ito and Ita? Oh, well, so they raised the five daughters and one son. Mm-hmm. And our mother was the third of the daughters. And since our grandfather was British, he sent most of the kids away to college to study. He worked very hard and provided for their ability. The oldest two went to England to study, and our mother was a third. She was sent to the United States. So then,
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C., George Washington University. And tell them about
it. Isn't there a temple secretary of school in there somewhere?
That was part of it.
She took courses at both places. Anyway, that's where she met our father.
But while she was there, she made quite a name for herself. Yes.
In what years was she there?
She was there 1938. Oh, let me think. I was born in 43. She was married in 42. It must have been 39, 40, 41 that she was there. And of course, World War II was really picking up speed. Mm-hmm. And so our dad was in Washington going to night school at GW. So they met in Washington and they were married in Washington, and my mother was given away by the Panamanian ambassador and was married at St. Stephen's Church in Georgetown in Washington, D.C. And the reception was at the Panamanian embassy. But before they were even married, tell her a story about how she made a name for herself.
Oh, yeah. She, after she finished school, or while she was in school, she ended up being, she took dictation from Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh, wow.
It was a sort of a
internship
sort of thing. So she was very excited about that. Anyway, that's a picture of her taking.
Wow.
This is a copy from a newspaper.
And she was also,
and she was also, what was it, the
cherry blossom.
She was also a candidate for Queen of George Washington University. And she also was one of the, what did you call them?
Princess. She was a
princess on the
Cherry Blossom
Cherry
Festival.
Cherry Blossom Festival on the float.
She was a Panamanian beauty. She really was.
This is her high school picture.
High school.
But it was during that period that a dashing young man from Pennsylvania swept her off her feet in his gallant uniform. He was an officer in the Army Air Corps. This is before the Air Force existed. And as such, they parted company because of the war. Dad was sent overseas. After they were married, he was sent overseas. And back then, of course, he got pregnant right away. So she went home to Panama, which is when I was born, a few months later after she got to Panama. And we lived with my grandparents until my father came back from the war. I was almost three. Back then, you didn't see they were separated for that long a period of time. And there were no psychologists that met with you when you got back. You know, you just did it because they were very strong people. And it saddens me to think that I think we're getting softer and softer as the generations go by. But anyhow, we still have a pretty strong military, that's for sure.
And he decided to settle down there after he got back.
Yeah, he was actually transferred down there. By that time, the Air Force came into being, separated from the Army, and there was an Air Force, U.S. Air Force. So he was transferred to Auburg Air Force Base in the Canal Zone.
What year was that now?
That would have been 1945, because Joey, was our oldest brother, was born in 46. So it must have been the latter part of 1945. And but he stayed in the inactive reserve, the active reserve. Because I remember him putting his uniform on, and because of the tropics, the uniforms were Bermuda shorts. But he still had the, you know, the bars and all the. And so that's when his
family. So he got out of the active Air Force and went into the
reserves.
Right.
But continued working as a civilian for now the Army.
But as the family grew, my brother Joe was born in 46, and then Milena came along in 48. And then Fred came along, and then our youngest brother came along. But in the meantime, I think my father began to see that he would have to do something to get all of us through college. So he started a chicken farm.
In addition to his regular job.
In addition to the regular job and the Air Force
Reserve.
He had a chicken farm.
And that was unusual that people in the Canal Zone had a side business.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't prevalent at all.
No, very few.
But he ended up selling eggs to the commissary. In fact, somewhere. And to the airlines. It was really quite successful. He had a partner, John Finlayson, who was also a Zonian. But
and they bought that farm in
1953, so I was 10.
The year I was born.
The year you were born, my gosh, I can't believe it. I wish we still had it now. And Padua is so vital, so just booming. But they sold it at some point when
74.
So they had it a good 10 years, 11 years.
Was the farm in the zone itself?
No.
21 years.
21 years.
53 to 74.
Gosh, what am I saying? 21 years. The farm was not in the Canal Zone. It couldn't be. It wasn't allowed. You couldn't have an individual business, private enterprise in the Canal Zone. It was all government. It was either Panama Canal Company, Canal Zone government, or U.S. military, or civilian. Civilian with the
working with the military,
which is what he did when he got out of the Air Force. Then he went to work for the Army Transportation Corps, although he still had his obligatory 2 weeks a year, I think, in the Air Force. So then the five of us went through Balboa High School, except for my youngest brother. By that time, our parents moved to California, so he went to high school in California, but the four of us graduated from Balboa High School.
And what was that like, the high school experience?
Well, high school in the Canal Zone was fascinating because there was no competition in terms of fashion. Everybody was kind of the same, you know. I think there was a lot of
value to that.
There was fashion. You weren't allowed to wear slacks. You had to wear a skirt or a dress. Boys could not wear jeans.
Remember, in the Canal Zone, everyone's got a job.
High school.
Okay, there is no upper class and lower class.
Poverty.
Everyone's middle class. Sure, some people, depending on their position, made a little more, but there essentially wasn't any distinction between classes. So everyone went to the same schools, except for private school.
Yeah, some people went to private school.
Which we did. There was a Catholic school.
We went to
elementary school. And once you finish eighth grade, then there was only public school.
But during that time, when I was still in high school, our mother began the first FM and bilingual radio station. So this young Panamanian beauty went off to become very enterprising businesswoman like my dad was also. And the station was called TNT Kaboom.
What did the TNT stand for?
Top Network Tunes.
Yeah.
So I went off to college right after she began that business, and I would send her the 45s, all the popular songs. I'd mail them home to her to use at her station, at her radio station. And she employed a lot of Canal Zone kids, right?
I wouldn't say a lot, but John Bateman.
A couple of GIs, too.
Yeah, John Bateman. They were employed as announcers. They made the advertisements.
And then she'd play all these English tunes, which became very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did she was a gray lady at the hospital. Volunteered as a gray lady at the
and
hospital.
She snuck out.
Margot Fontaine was snucked out.
There was political chaos at a certain period of time, and she had to sneak out. One of the politicians, his wife, was Margot Fontaine, the famous English ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
So she snuck her out.
She also
in the car, under a blanket.
Can you imagine?
Lashed her to a plane so they could put her on and get her out of the country.
But I think the reason she was asked to do that, she was employed by the Pan American newspaper, and that was owned by a man named Armodio Arias. The Arias family is a very prominent family in Panama, but he was married to Margot Fontaine, right?
One of the audiences was, I'm not sure which one.
And it was he, though, her boss, who asked her to do this, to sneak her out of the country. And one time she phoned me at school and said, Clark Gable is in town with his wife, and he needs transportation from his yacht out to the airport. Would you like to go? Do you think you'd be permitted to get out of class to go to the airport? I said, of course. And I went down to the office right away and got permission from Marie Weir, was the vice principal.
This was in high school?
High school. I think I was a freshman or a sophomore. And so she picked me up first, then we went over to the pier, found the yacht, and picked up Clark Gable and his wife and one other couple. And I sat in the back seat between them. Clark Gable sat with his wife and mommy in the front seat.
Mm-hmm.
But we drove out to Tocumen Airport, and I remember just being in awe of this man. He was so handsome. And I was all of 14 years old. And when they left to board the airplane, I went over to where he had been standing with his leg up on a ledge, and he had been flicking the ashes from his cigarette or his cigar. And I got the ashes.
Oh, yeah.
And my mother dropped me off at the ballpark near home on our way back, and I went up to everybody and said, look, these are the ashes that Clark Gable was from his cigarette or his cigar or whatever. Anyway, she was always involved in something like that. It was amazing. What else?
So life in the Canal Zone,
mm-hmm.
It was great.
Oh, it was fantastic.
What are some unique things? Oh, there were two high schools, that's
mm-hmm.
it. You know, Balboa High School and Cristobal High School, about 50 miles apart. They were the rivals.
Well, we played the junior college.
Oh, and the junior college,
also.
Right. So our football league consisted of four teams. The athletic club. Which were guys that finished high school and went into the apprentice program down there. The junior college.
Junior college.
Cristobal High School and Balboa High School.
Yeah.
So we had you play each team about two times, so you had a season of six games.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's all.
Maybe three.
It has to have been more than that.
No,
but we had the Palm Bowl at the end
of the
year.
Yeah, at the
end
of the year.
And there was always the Jamboree. We would take this rickety train that was awesome with rattan seats, and it would just shimmy all the way across. Remember?
Yeah.
To go from Balboa to the Pacific
across
side of
the
isthmus. Crossing over to the Atlantic side of the Isis, we'd take this train and, you know, cheering on the train. And Malena and I were both cheerleaders in high school. You just couldn't get enough of it, you know. It was so much fun. I mean, good, clean, wholesome fun. It was fantastic.
I'm sorry, you guys lived on the Pacific side?
Yes.
Right.
The most time? Mm-hmm. But
we lived in different, before, what the first assignment with Dad was to Albrook, right?
Right.
Albrook Air Force Base. Then he was there how long?
Very short period of time, I think.
And then you moved to where?
And then they moved to Corundu Heights, the lower level. I know I was five when I had my fifth birthday there. And that was Army civilians, so he doesn't work for the Army. And then we moved to Corundu itself, which is when Joey was born. And then we moved to the Atlantic side, which we called the other side.
So it was how long were you there? That's where I was
That's
born.
That's where you were born.
And then we moved back.
And where on the Atlantic side did you live?
Gulick.
Oh, Fort Gulick.
Fort Gulick. And there was a small civilian section in Fort Gulick. I mean, the active military had the big concrete homes. We had these little cottages. They were wooden cottages up on stilts. That was Gulick for
the
civilians.
And then they were in Fort Gulick for about how long?
2 years, perhaps.
And then
I was there first and second grade.
Back to the Pacific side?
And then back to the Pacific side, and that's when we moved to Corindu Heights up on the hill that used to be called Christmas Heights at Christmas time.
Yes. Yeah.
What year did we move into Corindu Heights?
I was in third grade. So
1951A.
1951. Okay.
And we lived there until 1967. December of 67,
yes.
We moved, left Corindu Heights.
Left the Canal Zone.
Left the Canal Zone and moved into Panama City.
And you were essentially moving following your father's jobs?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And it's really interesting to me, the Atlantic and the Pacific side and the, the other side and that kind of sentiment surrounding mm-hmm. it. But were there any great economic or, like, demographic or social differences that you guys really noticed moving between the sides? Was one side wealthier or the other side maybe a bit?
Well,
not in the Canal Zone.
Not in the Canal Zone.
No, although you might say that because the Pacific side had Panama City, which was more vibrant,
right,
had more
right.
cultural
capital.
Activities and being the capital, that perhaps we drew a lot of Panamanians who came to the high school,
mm-hmm.
attended the high school. Either their parent, they paid a certain
they had to pay
tuition
mm-hmm.
at the high school, but I think on the Cristobal side, there was less of that. There was
mm-hmm.
less interaction with Panamanians. They didn't have the Panamanian enrollment,
yeah.
that at least the percentage that
because
we had.
Because the city on the Atlantic side, Colon,
mm-hmm.
was not as affluent as Panama
Correct.
City.
Correct,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right.
Totally different if you've done any research
yeah.
or study
yeah.
over
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember as far as the kids themselves now. I don't remember feeling any difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's really strange. I felt very fortunate to have a bicultural type of upbringing because
mm-hmm.
my mother being Panamanian, we would go into the city a lot and spend Sundays with my grandparents and all the aunts and uncles and cousins. So we were raised with Spanish and English,
mm-hmm.
whereas I think a lot of American families that went to Balboa High School and Cristobal High School, they didn't have that advantage. They were all Americans, and then the maids that they employed were from the islands,
mm-hmm.
and they spoke English with
right.
that Bajan accent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the correct description of it or not. Bajan accent?
Yeah,
yeah.
The island accent.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, there was
and
a difference.
And when we were growing up down there, there was no drinking age limit?
In the Canal Zone, there was.
But not in Panama.
So do we want to divulge that?
Sounds
intriguing.
Yeah.
I'm
going to divulge this. When I went up, she had already started college. You were done with college in Washington, D.C. when I went to visit.
Finished.
Yeah, you
so.
Finished at
and
65.
I went up,
you went up in 67.
I went up, no, this was before I graduated. I went up the summer before in 66 or 65 and visited my sister and my older brother at
mm-hmm.
Christmas time. Well, she was living just outside of Washington, D.C. or in Washington, D.C. And there was a favorite bar in Georgetown that they all used to like to go to. So my mother said, well, gee, when you're visiting there, you're going to want to go with them. So, let's go down the driver's division in Panama City, and we'll get you a driver's license that says you're 18 already. And so she did. She went down, gave the guy $20. He typed up a license that said I was already 18. So I went to visit them, and I got to go to Georgetown and all
Wow.
Wherever you went.
About that. Oh, my God.
And
that's
needless
great.
To say, when I went off to college, I still had that same
attitude.
Driver's license.
That's
yeah.
great.
I used it.
One of the things I remember vividly about high school, since I was the oldest one, was that it was very hot. We had no air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I got to be a senior, there were a few of us that were really pushing for air conditioning. And somehow we got it through the student association and in through the administration, and it was approved. We got air conditioning. They were only window air conditioners, but nonetheless, you know, installing central air would have been costly, mm-hmm. to say the least.
And we would make a trip to the U.S. every third summer, because it was paid, the transportation was paid for. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget seeing my first escalators, because we had no escalators in Panama at the time. And going back to Panama and just being so excited about escalators and wondering, when are they going to put escalators in the
We would typically fly from Howard Air Force Base or Albrook.
Or Albrook, either one.
Up to Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Unload there and then usually get on a train.
An overnight train.
An overnight train up to either D.C. or go all the way up to Pittsburgh and Johnstown.
All the way up to Detroit. To New Jersey. Our father, as we mentioned, had been in the military, but he came originally from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. He was one of 10. And two of his brothers, or three of his brothers, lived in New Jersey. So we would take the train up from Charleston all the way up to New Jersey, where he'd pick up a new car, I think.
Right.
And we'd go visiting his three brothers there, and then trek across New Pennsylvania, the Turnpike, to Johnstown to visit Uncle Ben's, and then to
Pittsburgh
to visit Aunt Marie.
And then go on to
Detroit
to visit Aunt Dolly and Uncle Albert.
And we had all our cousins convinced that we lived in the jungle, in a treehouse, and that we played with all the animals, and it was fun to tell them what
they had. We paddled water buffaloes down the canal to get to school. It was ridiculous. We had such a great time.
Give them stories.
Every 3 years, that trip. And before we started flying from Panama to Charleston, we would take a ship, Military Sea Transport Service, MSTS, all the way to New York. So that was quite an adventure.
On the Panama Line?
Not the Panama Line. It was the Military Sea Transport, MSTS.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
And then it was MATS, MATS, Military Air Transport Service, that we, because of Dad working for the Army, as a civilian for the Army.
I do remember taking a trip to New Orleans on the SS Cristobal.
Now that was a Panama Canal line.
Yeah, that was part of the Panama line.
So how were you entitled to do that?
I have no idea. But I remember getting seasick. And the pictures, there are pictures of the Cristobal, you know, down in the museum.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
I need to take a look.
When I saw a picture of the museum, Joey and I were,
Really?
And to prevent getting seasick, you had to swim in the pool. It was a little bitty pool about half the size of this room.
Float in the pool and you don't get seasick.
Oh,
when you're
gosh.
Moving with the...
Oh, my gosh.
That was about 1961.
I did not get seasick. I laughed at my two brothers for...
So, it was the three of us and Dad, right? You, Joe, and I, and Dad.
I'll be darned.
Like staying home with Mommy.
We'll have to find out how you are entitled to do that.
The other thing was
there.
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure you've all heard that everybody had maids. Mm-hmm. So even though we were middle class, we had maids. They sent people out to keep our lawns trimmed and everything like that. So the place was just
immaculate.
So immaculate. Everywhere you went in the canal zone, it was immaculate.
There was no trash.
It was weird.
There were no homeless.
It's quite a shock when you move up here. Well, of course, now the canal zone has been defunct for the past 10 years. But on the downside of that is they were so careful about eliminating mosquitoes that these DDT trucks would come through, and we'd run out and play in this mist. Some of us would keep our head up above the smoke, and we'd be running, and you couldn't see the limbs, the legs moving beneath.
You haven't heard those stories yet? Running
not
behind
DDT trucks.
You're
trying to hold your breath.
Oh, yeah. Trying to hold your breath.
See, who could
hold
their breath
the longest? Following
a DDT
truck.
Oh, wow. Which is a chemical no longer used because it's
so destructive. And
a lot of people have died from lung cancer, and the suspicion is that it was attributed to that sort of thing in the canal.
So we're going tomorrow.
Oh, let's see what else I have written down.
Things to do. There weren't a whole lot of things to do. There were no amusement parks, things like that. You had every base had a theater. So we'd go to the theater. Typically, you had a bowling alley
Mm-hmm. A horse stable.
Clubhouse.
Oh, we all loved horses. We had stables. A lot of us took
horses. Oh, yes, there were stables. Swimming pool.
The beach.
Fort Amador Beach. The one beach on the Pacific side, specifically for the Zonians.
We lived up on the hill and we used to take cardboard and sit on the cardboard and go down the hill. Mm-hmm. Sitting on cardboard and bumping along. Do you remember doing that?
Yes, I do.
Or getting the dustpan and putting that on a skate and riding down the hill.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Or building our own. You and Mary Redding.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Built a nice lightning.
Like a soap
box. It was called lightning. Yeah. You remember that. Yeah. Had a yellow lightning
black
on it. It was
and
black with a yellow lightning stuff on it. Yeah.
Made with skates and
boards. Yeah, just rode that thing down that hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get television until 1957.
I was 12 years old
when
we finally got a TV set.
Gosh, it's incredible.
You were 12?
Wow.
So
yeah.
That was
that
48,
would
1960.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How much? And then when it began, it didn't come on the air until something like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and went off the air at 10.
Yeah.
Johnny Carson.
And
one
exciting
station.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, one station. Right. CFM.
I'm sorry, you started to ask.
Oh, I was just wondering, just considering that, the fact that, you know, the television wasn't available until 1957 and news probably didn't move as fast as it did today, how did stateside politics kind of percolate through to the Panama Canal Zone? Were they heavily influential in the area, or was there kind of an absence of that?
Definitely there was a presence.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely,
yes,
a presence.
Through the radio?
But we got most of our news through the newspaper and movies.
Yeah, that's right. You went to the movies, you got the news before this film started.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. And definitely the politics influenced us.
The Pan American newspaper was all in English, and they carried a lot of news from the States.
That's right. They had an English edition that carried the news from the States. And I remember when when Nixon was vice president to Eisenhower, he came to visit Panama, and he rode the train and stood at the last on the last car of the train, waving to everybody when he left. I remember that distinctly.
You were there, watching him wave.
We saw him. Yeah, yeah. I think Dad and I made an effort together. Or the school. That's what it. I was like in seventh or eighth grade at St. Mary's, and they took us the class to go see him.
So we had pools, theaters, bowling alleys, the clubhouse. You've heard of the clubhouse?
I don't think so. Or I've heard the word, I didn't really understand exactly what it was.
It was kind of like the cafeteria.
Oh.
Was it?
Just
place to socialize?
A big
cafeteria.
A place to socialize.
And you go and eat there.
Get your french fries.
And we had teen clubs.
Teen clubs.
And teen club was vital. Oh, that was vital.
Absolutely.
You wanted to see anybody, if you wanted to see your crush or...
You went to the teen club, it was always well chaperoned, it was always a great band. And we hung out there.
We had our sports, baseball, civic leagues of baseball. Then each of the high schools had football, track, baseball, basketball. Soccer didn't come along until many years later, even after I left.
Yeah, they didn't have gymnastics.
No, they didn't have gymnastics. They had swimming, of course. We had good swimmers.
Yeah.
And imagine playing football in the tropics.
With all that heavy gear.
Padding. Yeah, the games would have to be at night.
Were they big events, the football games?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Our oldest brother, Joe, graduated in 64. He was class president when the riots began that eventually led to a new treaty and eventually, of course, a turnover. But that began it had a ripple effect.
Yeah. But I want to mention one last thing we used to do, and this was a custom. I mean, we did this every year.
Oh, the causeway.
Well, wait a minute. At Christmas time, Christmas trees.
Oh, the Christmas tree bonfire.
We would have a huge bonfire, but we formed teams, and we were constantly stealing each other's trees.
Yes, yes.
So where we lived, down the hill from where we lived, there were old World War II
bomb shelters.
Mm-hmm. So we would store our trees in bomb shelters.
Oh my gosh, I forgot.
And then the little group that I was with, my older brother's group, guys that did the stealing of the trees and everything, they used me as the spy. So, you know, I was this innocent little thing, and I'd find out from some of the other guys where their trees were hidden, and then they'd steal. And this went on all the time. Every team would try to amass the largest number of Christmas trees, and then at the ballpark, baseball park, they would, everybody would bring their trees and huge bonfire. Every single Christmas we did that. I can't believe it either.
And we hide them up on the roofs.
We hide them on,
you know, the patio that we had up in the...
Yeah, hide them on the roofs, hide them anywhere we could think of. We wanted to have the most...
Tie them with ropes with cans on them, so that if someone tried to steal them, you hear them. Things like that, it's going to wake you up.
Amazing.
Yeah, Christmas tree competition.
Oh, the other thing I can remember, living there up on the hill, there was a ledge out of the between the first and second level of the house. It was a ledge, and we would sit on the ledge on one side of it as the hill went up and around and came back down.
Cul-de-sac.
And the policemen would come, the military policemen would come every night to check, you know. And as they drove up the hill, we'd be on one side of the houses, and we would yell out, "What's the penny made out of?" And as soon as he came around the other side, the other group would yell out, "Cheap copper." That was a big thrill. We were being rebellious.
Where we live, this cul-de-sac that we're talking about, during Christmas, it was well known.
Throughout all of the
Canal Zone and Panama City, too. And people would come from afar in their cars, because all of us in the neighborhood, how many homes would that have been?
About 12, a dozen homes.
We would put out decorations in our yards, which was something Mommy was real good at.
Yes.
Our mother painted very well. And she would make figurines that stood, you know, 3 to 4 feet high. But everyone in the neighborhood had different animated, I mean, the Myers
like
made
deer.
Theirs motorized and animated.
And we had icicles that were
fake icicles.
Fake icicles.
It was plywood, but cut out in the shape of icicles.
Mm-hmm. Painted.
And painted with blue and white and sparkles, and everyone would hang them from the.
Yeah. And the little ones would entertain themselves with a notebook and pen and lie on the side. And as each car came out, we'd copy down the license plate. And then compare.
How many did you get?
Oh, I got it.
But the other unique thing about that and all the decorations, was that there was no hesitation to put out a nativity scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you didn't have a problem.
No problem with that whatsoever. In fact, our mother cut out some figurines that represented the different races, and mm-hmm. she painted them. There was a little China doll, and then there was a little black boy, and a little white girl with blonde hair, and then the creche with the baby Jesus, mm-hmm. and she painted them all and had a spotlight on them, and there was never any complaint about it. Mm-hmm. Now you have to be careful of all of that sort of thing.
Can you guys go into maybe the 64 riots and how that affected your family?
Well, that's why I wish my oldest brother were here, because as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. he was
a senior and I was a freshman that year, so I do remember.
You remember it too, mm-hmm. of course.
I remember. What saddened me was that my mother's family took one side, and of course my father, mm-hmm. and we took another side, and I can just remember so much. Sitting in our back porch, we could see the lights of the city and everything, and you could see fires that were starting mm-hmm. as rioting went on and everything, and then the arguing would start between my aunt and my father or my whatever, and I'll never forget telling a high school friend of mine, I said, "This is when I hate being bicultural, because mm-hmm. they're not getting along, everybody's fighting with each other." Mm-hmm. So, but it was, it
older
started
brother
innocently.
Joe should be here to talk about that.
It started innocently.
Well,
got
it started.
Out of hand. It got out of hand.
But we've also, the U.S. government always has a presence, an intelligence presence in Panama. And as such, I worked for the CIA for a while. When I graduated from college, I was a translator. and was transferred. After working in Washington, D.C., I was transferred to the Canal Zone. Pardon me, and I had an undercover ID. Did you know that?
I did not know that about your sister.
I was Donna, and I was the only one permitted to answer the red phone. The red phone was the informant calling into the office to report in. A woman named Thelma King was an outspoken communist, and she taught at the University of Panama. And I had to go out and take her payoff to her. Leave it at a safe house. You know what a safe house
is.
Anyways, that's part of my life I really wasn't supposed to talk about, but I think it's so far into the past now that it doesn't
matter. The statute of limitations has passed.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
I mean, how many years has it been? That would have been 19. You graduated in 65, so that was about what,
66?
66. And is that what Mr. Deerwester was involved with?
Don't remember that name, Deerwester.
They lived up at the top of the hill. They had a son, Barry, my age.
Oh, I remember Barry, but I don't remember that
he was. I thought he was involved with it.
No.
But it was the only building in all of Fort Amador that didn't have any windows. That was the office, the CIA office. How could anybody not guess that that was where the intelligence was?
And that was where, in Fort Amador?
In Fort Amador.
Okay, you were going to talk about the Causeway. That was the other thing.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was another thing that we
best did. Make out place in the world.
Best Contractor's Hill. Oh, that was also a good one.
With little to do down there, one of the activities was going out to what we call the Causeway. It joined the mainland to three little islands. Mm-hmm. One of those islands is where the beach was. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very small beach.
Which
very
is still
small.
There.
With a shark net, and you just cruise out to the Causeway and just hang out, and if you were over 18, you'd drink beer out there, and you'd go out at nighttime to make out or whatever.
You'd have a gorgeous view of the city from there.
It's
so
beautiful. It's
very
right
romantic.
There was the city across the bay, you know, with the beautiful water, the moon out, the city lights and everything.
What so more could you want?
It's fabulous.
It's all coming to an end.
What I don't understand, if the Causeway was part of Fort Amador, how did civilians get out there? Could they, would the MP,
well,
military police at the gate of Fort Amador allow all?
Well, we had access to the Army Navy Club, which was in Amador.
Yeah, but I'm talking about civilians from Pancanal.
Oh, I don't know.
How did Pancanal civilians?
They must have allowed.
I guess, okay.
Everybody had an ID card.
There was a checkpoint, a military, like a guard gate, a guard post.
To every base.
But I think all they had to do was say, we're going out to the Causeway, and they had to show an ID, possibly.
Yeah.
And as long as they weren't Panamanian.
Right.
Looking back on it, that was very unjust. But,
some Panamanians got through.
Dio Eduardo
made it out to the Panama Beach all the time and do his exercise. Loli's father, who went out, would go out to Fort Amador and walk. So there were a few who had some privileges,
some pull
to be allowed on base to get out to the beach. What else were the activities? Monday night spaghetti night at Fort Amador, Officers Club.
All you can eat for 50 cents.
Yep, all you can eat.
Spaghetti,
garlic bread, salad, iced tea.
And I would drive my father crazy because I didn't like spaghetti. I always had to order the 75 cent triple decker, what do you call that?
Club sandwich.
Club sandwich. Unbelievable.
Bingo. Yeah. My mom won a lot of bingo.
Yeah.
She had a lot of luck.
Lottery.
That was also something at the Officers Club.
Amazing.
When did you guys end up leaving the Panama Canal Zone?
Well, each of the five of us left home to go to college.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We were sent to the United States, except for Mike, our youngest brother, who moved to the States with my parents, mm-hmm. like we told you earlier. So I left essentially in 61 after graduating from high school. Mm-hmm. But because my parents lived there and because we had Panamanian relatives there, I came back every Christmas and summer.
For breaks, right.
And then afterwards, mm-hmm. less often, and then now more often.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you went to college in D.C.?
I was an hour out of Washington.
Okay. Was that transition difficult for you, going from this kind of tropical environment up to the...
Frankly, yes, it was in that regard. Mm-hmm. I remember my first snowfall. Mm-hmm. My roommate was from Aruba, and we would run out. She hadn't seen snow either. Mm-hmm. The rest of the class, there were only 99 in my class. Mm-hmm. So the rest of the class had seen snow, and they were like, what are you doing out there in your PJs making angels in the snow? And then walking into the cafeteria eating a snowball. But
and the only way we communicated was with either letters or occasionally a ham radio.
That's right.
There were no cell phones, mm-hmm. and to make a call from the Canal Zone up to Maryland
was
very expensive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So occasionally someone came along to offer to hook up a ham radio call, and other than that, it was.
And it was during that period of time when I first started college. In 61, that the Bay of Pigs in Cuba occurred.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And everybody was up in arms that the Russians were going to do something to help the Cubans. And I mean, it was, so I was a nervous wreck. And somehow one of my classmates who lived in Maryland, not too far from the college, had a ham radio. And her father said, bring her here and we'll help her communicate with her family. Because mm-hmm. I didn't know what, we couldn't talk on the phone, we couldn't mm-hmm. do anything, and mail was too slow. Yes. So we really counted on ham radios at times like that.
So then the next in line, Joe left in 64, Milena left in 67, I left in 71, mm-hmm. and then the family left, our parents, mm-hmm. with our younger brother, finally left in 74.
74.
Yeah, because we'd all
settled down
in the
States.
Those of us who were married, we settled down in the States, so mm-hmm. they decided to
even they settled down in San Diego, California.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Didi, how do you feel about the turning over the canal? And the Canal Zone.
I frankly have always had very mixed feelings about it. Mm-hmm. I think that probably the process should have started much, much earlier, and they wouldn't have had all that tumultuous period. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I feel that pulling out of the Canal Zone and leaving all that infrastructure to Panama was rather unfair to the U.S. They did not get recompensed for an immense amount of infrastructure that are now being used. I mean, they're still functioning. Mm-hmm. They're still able to be refurbished and used. So there are different aspects of it. How about you?
Yeah. I did not like seeing us give up the defense of the canal and the running of it. I did understand, I don't think we were paying very much in rent to Panama.
Correct.
And that could have been much more. And I don't think we needed all that land. It was 500 square miles of land, mm-hmm. which was basically jungle. But I just didn't think anyone was going to run and maintain the canal as efficiently as the U.S. could. Maybe I'm being proven wrong now, but you still go back and see some things that are in disarray.
Larry and I go down pretty often. Recent years, and we've talked to several people down there who have told us and shown us that there it's just expanded immensely. If you go down, I don't remember the terms used for where all the containers mm-hmm. go now. The site of Cristobal High School is no longer there. It's all containers. So
ships.
The traffic going through, I mean, that's proof that mm-hmm. the traffic going through the canal has increased. Mm-hmm. However, as you cross the canal, when we cross the Atlantic side of the canal, I think it's the Peter McGill locks, mm-hmm. you're crossing over at the level of the lock, and you can see the apparatus that was built back in 1914 when it first opened. And I think when the U.S. was there, it was maintained much more meticulously. Whereas now, you can see the paint peeling off, and you just didn't see things like that when we were there, when the Americans... The North Americans had control.
Probably my feelings is also somewhat selfish because I don't have a hometown to go back to.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and I wish it, you know, I'd like to be able to go back to my old high school. Can't do that anymore. The house that I was raised in Trinity Heights, it's still there, but all that home's colored, painted different colors, and they all have added their own little modifications to the house. It's not the consistent style. Everyone was a light green or
right.
greenish white
painting. It's just not what I grew up in.
Right.
It was government housing.
It was all government housing, obviously. So it's selfish in that way that, yeah, I don't have what I used to know to go back to.
Mm-hmm. Being from a multicultural family, does that affect your feelings about the turnover to the canal at all?
It's not as easy. It's not as easy to say. I don't think Panama could maintain it as well as the U.S. could. You can't say that when you've got relatives that are.
You're right.
And yet, you know, they're very well educated. A lot of them come to the States and get their engineering degrees from Purdue, Georgia Tech. Many of our cousins
are
Georgia Tech and Purdue graduates and went to Notre Dame and LSU. So they're very well educated. And the University of Panama is a good school.
But I think Panama has always been very multicultural. So trying to understand it from each perspective is very difficult. The business opportunities have always been in Panama, not the Canal Zone, but now the Canal Zone is no more. So a lot of the Saudi Arabians, and I mean, we've got a large
big Chinese population
of Asians, and they're very assimilated into the culture now. But the question was, how has it affected us?
Mm-hmm. And your opinions about the turnover?
I agree with Fred that it's difficult to acknowledge that we don't have a home to go home to, mm-hmm. except that we do still have relatives there. So now when we go to Panama, we're in the city mm-hmm. most of the time, and then we go up to the beach and to the mountains mm-hmm. where we might know people or just to enjoy the environment up there. How did it affect you? How do you feel about it?
It hurt in the beginning when we first did it, but now looking at the results, I mean, it's Panama's growing like crazy, and it's financially doing, I mean, it's one of the wealthiest Latin American countries. So in the long run, it was a good thing.
From the year 2000 until 2005, I was asked to be the president's liaison to Panama for the National Association of Realtors. And in that capacity, I saw Panama just totally blow up. I mean, the immense amount of investors that came to Panama, either for personal investment or to invest in businesses, grew in leaps and bounds. I mean, I just feel like I was personally witness to it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was good for Panama. It's just sad on a personal level. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow you're going to be interviewing Father Kennedy. And Father Kennedy was connected to our family in that.
Many years.
For many, many years. He was associated with St. Mary's Parish, and as such, with St. Mary's Parochial School, which is where all of us went to grammar school.
Mm-hmm. And his friendship with Monty was.
Oh, yes, he was a very strong friendship with our parents and my mother in particular. He married when I was first married in 1968. He did the ceremony, and then.
The next year I tried to get him to marry me and my husband, mm-hmm. and he was going to be away. Mm-hmm. And that really hurt because I wanted him to marry his two anyway. So what happened?
Well, then he married. My mother remarried when she was 70-something. She married a Panamanian, and he did the ceremony for them. And then when my mother was very sick, he came and gave her the last rites.
But all this was up here.
Yeah, this was in Florida.
Florida. But he gave her the last rites, and then I remarried after my husband passed away. I remarried Larry Corgan, who is a big Zonian family down mm-hmm. in the Canal Zone, and he came from Philadelphia down to Florida to marry us. So he's been
a real
vital part of our spiritual lives for a long time. Mm-hmm. Social too. He's quite social.
Oh, yeah.
Dinner with him last night, and he had to have his martini. Oh my gosh.
Anyway. Maybe you can talk about the Catholic culture down in the zone. Was it prevalent?
Definitely. Well, Panama itself is a Catholic country, mm-hmm. and there was a large percentage of Catholic parishioners in the Canal Zone. But I would say, generally speaking, it was a Christian group of Americans that mm-hmm. lived in the Canal Zone. And there were Methodists, and there was a United Church of Christ, and there was a Lutheran Church, and there was the
Episcopalian.
Yeah, it was a real, it was a
I think it was very much like the U.S.
Very, very, yeah, good mix. But one interesting thing was the marriages in Panama between the Jewish faith and between Jews and Catholics.
That went
on much more than it did in the States.
Yeah,
and I think it's because it was so small, and mm-hmm. you know, families all knew each other mm-hmm. and everything. So
it must be confusing to you, though, to hear us talk about the Canal Zone, but then Panama. I mean, because there were two distinct
cultures
down mm-hmm. there: mm-hmm. the Americans who lived in that strip of land called the Canal Zone, mm-hmm. and then the Panamanians. So we're referring, in reference to these marriages, these
inter-faith
marriages, that was Panama itself.
Yeah.
Was there a Catholic school on the Atlantic side?
What, yes, I went to St. Mary's Academy.
St. Mary's Academy.
First and second grade.
On the Pacific side, there was the one Catholic school, which also happened to be St. Mary's.
That's mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Oh, the stories we could tell.
It was run by the Franciscans.
First it was the Franciscans. I had the Franciscans.
I had them up until kindergarten.
Okay.
And then first grade for me on up, the Sisters of Mercy out of Brooklyn, New York.
Out of Brooklyn, New York.
How they arranged.
Wow.
I don't know.
It's very interesting.
It truly
was. They wore their big white habits. Mm-hmm. And we had uniformity. You had to wear a tie. And again, you think about the tropics, why would we be wearing ties? But they brought that from New York.
Mm-hmm. My name is everybody calls me Milena, but it's actually Maria Elena, Maria Elena. Mm-hmm. And when the nuns arrived from Brooklyn, I was told by my teacher that I would no longer be Maria, that I would be Mary.
Oh, so gosh,
I still
never
have
knew
schoolwork,
that
and it's Mary Bremer.
No kidding.
It took them a while to finally, you know, settle in and adjust to the culture. But no, it had to be.
That's funny. My real name I was named after my mother, Dalys, D-A-L-Y-S, and the nuns couldn't pronounce Dalys, they said Dallas. And I was just cringe. Oh, no, don't call me Dallas. But Fred was Fred, and Joe was
Joe.
They
called me Bob.
I don't know why.
What else? For us, I'll tell you something else to do. Again, because of my dad having the business, not so much my sisters, but I and my older brother, we spent a lot of our time Saturdays going out to the farm. We had a lot of open fields, so we spent a lot of time cutting grass, mm-hmm. maybe mixing the feed for the chickens. We'd pick grapefruit and take them back to the Canal Zone, and I'd walk around the canals in our neighborhood
with a big burlap sack
full of grapefruit and sell them three for a nickel. Well, we had a lot of pineapple, but I think that was a couple of years before me in the field up there.
Oh yeah, across the creek was a big field of pineapple. We had cashew trees, get up trees. And the horses.
And horses. Six horses. At one point we had six horses. What else can we tell you?
How was the transition coming back to America for your parents?
Good question.
It was tough. It was a difficult transition. I think that my mother never dreamed that she'd be moving from Panama to the United States permanently after, you know, leaving her parents behind and her siblings mm-hmm. behind and all the nieces and nephews. And then my dad, he was happy about moving back to the States because he was originally from Pennsylvania. But it was difficult in that they decided to move to California because at the time I was the one who had children. So their only grandchildren, I was living with my husband who at the time was with the FBI. we were living in San Diego. So they moved to San Diego and their marriage basically fell apart. So in that regard, it was difficult. It was kind of like, well, the beginning of the end, kind of.
Well, the other reason, too, is she closed down the radio station because of
Torrijos?
Torrijos, the dictator that came before Noriega.
And that's why she closed down the radio station.
She was able to, it was easier for her to leave with that done. Because they kept trying to tell her what she could and could not put on the radio.
I didn't know that.
But I'm surprised that none of us stayed to work down there. Out of the five of us, Fred was the only one who married a Panamanian, but they lived in the States all this time.
Yeah, but I married one up here in the States.
I met her up here
in the States.
And, that's right.
Yeah, I got married up here. I don't know if I felt comfortable enough with the Spanish language to have stayed down there and done business in town.
But now you would.
I don't know. I would because everyone down there speaks English, so we'd get along just fine.
We all speak Spanish, but you're much more fluent than the rest of us.
Joe's, our youngest brother is very fluent.
The one who left at 14, he's the most fluent.
Yeah.
And you're fluent. We all, but mine is just conversational Spanish, so I would never dream of going into business down there because it's a different vocabulary.
Right.
That's probably the way you feel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not.
And our father was from German parents, German-American parents, and Milena and her husband had the opportunity to live in Germany for quite a while, for two tours of duty, right?
Right.
He was a West Point graduate. But I was in Germany a couple of years ago, and I thought, I should feel comfortable with this language. And in Panama, we were only exposed to Spanish, English, and occasionally French, because our grandmother.
But at home, Dad would try to teach us.
Yes.
We all learned how to count in
count
German.
Count to 10.
We all learned there were little children's songs we had to learn in German.
I flew for Pan Am back in the dark ages when you couldn't be married, when Pan Am was vibrant.
Are you familiar with Pan Am? Okay.
Pan American World Air. Anyhow, occasionally they would ask me to read the German announcement because I knew enough German and they had the translation right there, but you had to read it in both languages. So I think back on that, that was a different person because I can't imagine being able to do that. It's such a guttural language,
It's difficult.
So it's so different from Spanish.
Very different from Spanish.
Yeah.
So can you review those questions? Have we touched on everything?
How did you interface with the U.S. military and the Panamanian people? Awesome. Pretty much, we interfaced with both. We pretty much covered it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we had our team club affairs and games, our football games, and then we also had our cousins and aunts and uncles in Panama City. So. Mm-hmm. We'd go to their birthday parties and
Milena and I were asked to be debutantes, so we each made our debut in Panama City. Mm-hmm. I ran for Miss Panama 1 year when I was 17. They found out that I wasn't going to be 18 until after the deadline. Mm-hmm. So although I made it to the final 10, I was booted out because I was 6 days too young or something like that.
And I was offered a theater scholarship. Study until they found out that I wasn't 100% Panamanian. I lost it because of Daddy's.
Oh my gosh.
Theater scholarship to where?
I didn't know that.
To Penn State?
To whatever college I was going to go to, they were going to give me.
Oh, really?
I started as a theater major when I came up to Penn State, but I lost the scholarship when the man who was going to give it realized that he said, I'm only giving them to full.
You were a half breed.
I was a half breed.
You know, if we were to talk about prejudices, I think the only time I felt prejudice against us was when somebody was from an American family in the Canal Zone discovered that our parents were mixed, American and Panamanian. It was almost as though, oh, you're one of them.
I was called a spick every once in a while.
Yeah, occasionally I heard that name.
No big deal.
At me
now
too.
That everybody,
these?
These, you know, it's just politically correct. Just a word.
Yeah.
Sticks and stones.
Did you ever feel that way?
No.
No?
No.
We all come from a little bit different perspective. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, so many years. Last month, or 2 months ago, our youngest brother, who lives in California, is turning 50 this year. So the rest of us, Joe, who is not here with us, and the three of us, we flew out to California and spent 5 days with him or 4 days with him.
Mm-hmm.
No spouses allowed, no children allowed, no grandchildren. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. It was a blast looking over my mother's letters that my father had sent to my mother during World War II. My mother kept them, and we were reading through that and looking at old pictures, and it's just fantastic.
You didn't wake me up for that part.
Say that again?
You didn't wake me up for that part. I missed out on that.
You were asleep?
Yeah.
Were asleep.
Yeah. Isn't it an old cookie, a red square cookie can?
Yes.
Where he keeps all the letters. Yeah,
right. The letter.
He's in the film industry, and we keep thinking that someday he'll get all these letters together and write up a script for it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see it on the Lifetime television or something. Beautiful letters.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Oh. Your holidays celebrated. Oh, Thanksgiving. My mother always had Thanksgiving dinner for our family, and now her family celebrates Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
We would have our Thanksgiving dinner, and who would come over? Itonita.
Itonita, our grandparents.
Well,
and Itama. Itama is my mother's youngest sister, and she was born 13 years after the fifth child was born. Along came my aunt Irma.
Mm-hmm.
So she's close to my age.
And mommy's her godmother.
And mommy's her godmother.
So that's why she was always invited.
With Julito or
with
by
her
herself?
Husband.
Well, by herself before she was married, and then with Julito after she was married.
Yeah.
And now they carry out the tradition.
Thanksgiving.
So generally speaking, the Panamanians would not celebrate. That's an American holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But now our side of the family, the Panamanian side of our family, is celebrating. So that's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Christmas, I always went to Ita's house to get that afternoon of Christmas Day. We'd go to our grandparents' house in Panama City. Share gifts and get eggnog.
She made the best eggnog. You have no idea. It was delicious.
And
delicious.
Turrón. What's the
Romponche.
No. The hard almond. That hard stick. It's white.
It's
made of almond. It's got a wafer on top of it, and it cracks. Very hard.
Was there a word for it in Spanish?
Turrón. Something like that.
Yeah.
Do alone.
I don't remember that one. I must not have liked it very much.
4th of July, we always had the parades. Balboa.
Oh, yeah.
The Shriners and...
That's right. The Shriners came out with their little buggies.
4th
of
July
was always celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the Shriners?
They'd even, wouldn't they do fireworks in Panama City? That we would watch them from the back at the stadium. That we would watch them from the back of our yard.
4th of July.
The back of our house overlooked Panama City, a portion of Panama City.
Yeah, we grew up on a hill, and the stadium was right on the other side of the boundary between the canal zone and Panama.
Yeah.
And they,
that's right.
They
fireworks on
4th of
July, even though they were Panamanians. But
and we do our own.
Kind of neat.
I'm not even sure if we did. Probably did they? Were there any organized firework displays in the canal zone?
At the ballpark in Corinda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember sparklers. That's the only thing Dad would let us handle.
New Year's was a big thing at the Tivoli.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
Big deal.
The Tivoli Hotel
in the canal zone.
That
was the place
built?
To go for New Year's Eve.
It was a wooden structure.
The big wooden,
yeah.
Big, they knocked it down from there recently.
Very elegant.
I'm sure someone else has mentioned it or in your talk.
Definitely.
But the dancing and the music was so exuberant that you could feel the floor.
Yeah, and we were teenagers.
Inundate.
We were teenagers. And we were celebrating as though we were 23. And nobody said anything.
And so
Big deal.
The drinking age was 18, right? But
in
the canal zone. So if you were junior or senior in high school and you could drive, you'd just go into Panama City and do your drinking, because there's basically, you know, if you could pay for your drink, you could.
If you could reach it, put a quarter up on the bar.
Well, I mean, if that's what amazed me when I came to the States to go to college, was a date in Panama was you went out to a movie, you went to dinner, you went to a movie, and then you went to the Hilton Hotel, to the bar, where they always had music, and you ordered your drink, and there was a casino, and we could go in and gamble in the casino. Came to the States, and I thought, holy cow, what do these kids do when they go out on a date? They'd go to a I don't want your son listening to this. They'd go to a motel room to sit around and drink. Just to drink.
Yeah.
There's no, and that really, that blew my mind. That just totally blew my mind.
It's almost as though when you have too many restrictions, you don't mature to a point where you can handle those things that were so prohibited, you know.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
So when all of a sudden you're permitted to do it, they go gangbusters, go overboard. That's how it seems. Anyway.
That's how it seemed then, yeah.
Just a little, yeah.
Just a little.
Because we were allowed to drink at home. My parents would give me beer because when I was very, very little, I was very, very skinny. Mm-hmm. And they said beer would fatten me up. So even as just a child, they'd give me about that much in a glass every day, just a little bit of beer to put some weight on me. And we'd have wine for special dinner. Thanksgiving, we would have wine at dinner. So it was a real shock to go off to college and find out that.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember Dad and Mommy would have happy hour out on the porch in Crewe, New Hampshire.
Every day.
And Dad liked his Manhattans, and when I was a senior in high school, he asked me, would you like me to fix you a Manhattan? And he did. And that's, I mean, but I sat with them, drank it slowly, like a nice young lady would do, you know. But it was part of our culture down there. But our culture, because we did have a Panamanian side, was different from most Americans raised in the canal zone, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there were many other families where one parent was Panamanian and one parent was American. So.
Quite a few.
I hope we've given you enough material.
That was great.
Definitely, thank you guys so much.
The Cayuga race, I guess you've heard about the Cayuga race.
Yes.
Oh,
that you say that.
I did it in 69.
Oh, I did it in 1998.
When you were 50.
Wow.
Well, I was just going to turn 50, and I said, better do it now because,
isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
That's a rode through the Panama Canal. I think that would be such an incredible experience.
It really was an awesome experience.
Yeah.
Did you only have four in your...
Yeah, four.
How old were you when you did it?
I was a sophomore.
In high school.
Sophomore in high school.
Yeah, girls weren't allowed to do it then.
That's right.
Because it was sponsored by the Explorers.
Yeah.
Explorers Scouts. So it was an all-male
thing until, in the 70s, 80s?
I don't know when they went co-ed. Girls' state and boys' state is something that you guys had. Yes. They had gone by the time I was there.
No kidding. Oh, this
what,
was...
Did they have that up here?
Girls' state.
Girls' state, boys' state?
That was political.
It was very educational, held usually over spring break.
Yeah.
Or Easter vacation.
Yeah, Easter vacation.
And you had to have a certain GPA to be permitted to go or to be invited to attend. And you learned about state government. And by the end of the week, you had elected a governor, a secretary of state, an attorney general.
Yeah, and when we weren't allowed to go anywhere else. We were stuck for one whole week.
Learning about state government. It was a fabulous program. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. Very beneficial program.
The Scouts were down there, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
What else?
I don't know, but they need the room.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Golf was big down there.
Golf was very big.
Fishing.
New
baseball,
Year's
they had the VFW baseball and all the different baseball leagues. And they'd have, they'd sponsor VFW. I remember Joe going around to sell decals that you would put on your bumper car to, for every dollar, $2, and that's how they raised money to come, send the team to the States.
That's right. That's how Joe got to the States.
For a competition.
Yeah, that's right.
Football. And it's swing. You know who led the VHS in touchdowns in 1970?
I was going to say Gary Ness.
1970.
No, you.
I did.
Did you? Thank you. Awesome.
Now ask me how many touchdowns.
Three.
One.
That's
funny. We were doing that badly?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. You mean Cristobal beat you?
Yep. Even the one game I made a touchdown, we lost.
That's incredible.
And it was against Cristobal.
Oh my gosh.
That's incredible.
Well, my sister brought a copy of Stock in the French Canal.
The French Panama Canal, that's what the stock looked like. But I guess the museum has one. Yeah.
Did we give you enough disjointed material?
That was fantastic. Thank you so much.